And welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And today, I must apologize, my guest became ill unexpectedly and is unable to attend today, but we'll get her on at another time. So today, I'm going to basically be doing a call-in show. If you have any questions that you'd like to ask, I will do my best to answer them for you. And, you know, if you ask me what the secret of life is, I'm going to answer 42. But I'm an old fan of things like, you know, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the original one, and all those things. But today, if you do have some questions, please do call in, because it's going to be kind of a loose show. I do want to talk about spirituality in medicine today. I'm seeing that there's more and more of a need for that. Let me give out the call-in number for you. It's toll-free, 1-877-876-5227. And again, that's 1-877-876-5227. And if you're too bashful, you can ask your questions to Don, and he'll tell me what they are, and I'll answer your questions, and you won't have to get on the air. If you don't mind getting on the air, then, you know, please do call in, and we'll see what we can cook up between us. So let me get started with what spirituality in medicine is all about. And there have been quite a few people that have written books on this subject, and of course everyone has a different take on it based upon whatever religious system they came up through. And I'd like to point out at the start that spirituality has very little to do with religiosity. So this is not Christian-based, it's not Muslim-based, it's not Buddhist, it's not any of those things. It's rather the combination of all those things that made religions. And it's the basic connection that we all have to the source, whatever you want to call it. You know, you can call it God, you can call it Jehovah, you can call it, you know, the great oneness, you can call it divine oneness, great spirit, whatever. I've always said God does not care what you call it. God only cares that you call it. So let's talk a little bit about how we get to these different states. How do we get to a point where we consider spirituality and medicine to be two different, completely separate things? And I know a lot of people think that's the way it is, but it cannot be that way. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But basically, when you're talking spirituality in anything, you are talking about your basic connection to the source, to the creator, to the all that is. So how you get to that connection is kind of a mystery for a lot of people. You know, you might have started out having that connection being something that was taught to you by your parents or whoever you were around, such as you got sent to Catholic school, you know, something like that, or you were brought up in a Tibetan monastery, whatever. At some point, you became aware of the fact that there was something that a lot of people pointed to and said was the highest being, the one who created everything. If you grew up in an atheist household, you were told that that was insane and that there was nothing and that that you were an idiot if you believed in such things. I know this because I have had several friends who are atheists and were raised that way, and it's kind of sad. But I don't mean to insult you. If you are of that ilk, that's fine. Let me just explain a few things about what happens to people when they don't have spirituality, and then we'll go into the medical application of this stuff. So if you have nothing that you can fall back on, that you can say, oh, you know, I can pray to this God or this substance or I have this feeling, then you're truly alone. And the ancient wisdom, ageless wisdom techniques teach us that there is only one unforgivable sin, and that is not believing in the Creator. And the Christians will say the only unforgivable sin is not believing in the Holy Spirit. Because if you don't believe, then you cannot be forgiven, you cannot be saved, etc., etc. The atheist will normally say there's nothing to be saved by or from. There are people who think that you absolutely go into nothingness when you die in this life. And some of you may have heard me speaking about that at a previous time. There was a man here in Sedona who had a healing center. And before he passed over, I was horrified to hear him say that there is nothing. When you pass on, it's just blank, and you just lay there in your coffin. And I thought, oh my God, that's truly a horrifying thing to even think of. How could somebody believe that? But he truly did believe that. He truly believed that there was nothing else, and that you would just lay there, and I guess that you couldn't get out of your decaying body or whatever, and I guess your consciousness would just be there for a while, and then you would fade into oblivion. There are other people who believe that when you pass from this life, you're going to go through a set of pearly gates and see an old man with a white beard by the name of St. Peter, who is then going to maybe let you in, if you've been good enough, and take you to see God, who is another old man with a long white beard sitting up on a throne. And if you're not good enough, then you're going to get kicked out and go down to the hot place and get introduced to the devil. There are other people who believe that there are many mansions and that you get to pick whichever one and that all of your friends and family will be there. There are other people who believe when you pass over that if you've done acts that they consider to be, I hesitate to say it, but acts that they consider to be really victorious and courageous, like being a suicide bomber or something, that then you're going to have 79 virgins waiting for you and, you know, everything that you ever wanted. And then there are those of us who have been to the other side several times and can tell you that what's on the other side will be whatever it is that you thought it was going to be until you wake up. And that does not mean that you wake up back in the physical body, but rather, you know, at some point you're going to come to and realize that that was all just your imagination. It was an illusion. And that what's real is rather that, you know, you're kind of in a school here. And when you're on the other side, you get to decide what you want to do, how you want to play, what experiences you want to have. And there are all of the saints and et cetera, the pantheon of goodness and of darkness. And, you know, you can kind of go and explore all that. So those of us who have had those near-death experiences, you know, you kind of get on the other side and go, wow, there really is nothing to be afraid of. And it really is a lot easier. Now, I want to give you a cautionary note here. There are a lot of people who say that they would really love to see what's on the other side. There are people who say that they would really feel a lot better if they knew. And perhaps they would. But I can tell you from my own personal experience and from talking with others who have been through it, that when you visited the other side and then you come back, it's so difficult to be here because you're still remembering what it felt like to be in unconditional love. You're still remembering what it was like to know everything and to be able to be anywhere with a thought. You're still remembering being in the presence of the great ones that have gone before us, all of the ascended masters, the great world teachers, the saints. And it's hard to be here. It's very, very difficult to be here when you've been through that. So be a little careful about what you wish for. You know, you may suddenly have something happen and be on the other side going, uh-oh. And I can also tell you that things are very easy when you're on the other side. It's not as difficult as it is here, by far. That doesn't mean you should run out and commit harakiri or anything like that. It just means that, and I'll explain this in a bit, it just means that it is different. And life is not difficult there. Everything is so easy. And you remember who you are. You remember the totality of your being. And that's why it's easy. Because when you're on the other side, you remember that you're this multidimensional, incredible being of light who has the connections to the source yet, to God. When you're on this side, you forget that. And even if you think you remember it, you don't remember it fully, usually. The ones that do are enlightened. But when you remember it fully, when you're on the other side, everything here is so easy, and it's a joke. You know, you kind of laugh. And you think, wow, look at that. I was all upset about that. That's nothing. And then I can tell you what happens next is you jump over back onto this side, get back into your body and say, oh, crap. I was out there in unconditional love. And I chose to come back here. And, I mean, I did the old head smack, you know, hand to forehead. And I said a few expletives. And I thought, oh, how could I have made that choice? But you make the choice because on the other side, it's easy. This is nothing. This is a game. It's like you're in a play. And when you're back here, you've forgotten a lot of that, and you know you're in for it now because you just agreed to a whole bunch of stuff that's going to make your life a heck of a lot harder. Yes, it'll make you grow. Yes, it will lead you closer and closer to enlightenment. But no, it is not going to be easy. And I can tell you, too, that when you come back, you're usually shown what you came to do on Earth. And they ask you, are you done? And in my case, I said, well, yeah, that was really simple. I came just to do that. And they said, yeah. Do you want to go back or do you want to stay here? And I said, well, if I go back, perhaps I can help more and remember who I am and not have to go through years of, you know, diapers and all this stuff, you know, being a toddler and having to grow up and learn things again and most importantly, not forget who I am and why I came here. So in my case, I chose each time to come back and it seemed to be a good idea at the time. And those of you that have been through that are probably laughing about it at this point. Because it always seems like a really good idea, you know. And then you get back in the body and you say, oh no, I was out there without pain, without this prison that we call the body, in unconditional love and able to be anywhere with a thought and knowing that life goes on and that there truly doesn't need to be any sorrow. And I chose to come back here. So, having made that choice 5 times, people, I can tell you that you never get to the point where you think, oh no, it's going to be too hard, I'm not going back there. So, with that basis for real spirituality versus religiosity, let's go on now as to how these things would affect you medically. And I'm speaking from a lifetime of experience. Most of you that have heard me before know that I've got 30 years as an RN, and my whole training was in ER and ICU, so it was all critical care. And then I did some home health and home hospice, and went from that on to doing a little bit more and more freelance stuff, doing some classes, and then I decided it would be brilliant for me to go to naturopathic medical school and decided at the age of 45 to go try that on. At which point, a lot of people said, are you insane? And I said, yes, apparently. And I went ahead and did all that. And I must tell you, I really enjoy being a naturopathic physician. But what led me down that path was all spirituality. And I can tell you from my side of things that going down that path taught me compassion. And it taught me patience. And it taught me to have a really good punch when I needed one. It taught me boundaries, not to let people abuse me. It taught me a whole lot of things. I already had a good work ethic, so that was not a problem. And, you know, if you're contemplating going into the health field, you better have a good work ethic because it isn't easy. You know, it's especially if you're going into nursing, it's really backbreaking, difficult work. And there's never enough time. You're lucky if you get a chance to sit down and eat, much less go to the bathroom. So, you know, you got to be dedicated to go into the healing profession. And it's not something that you're going to find yourself alone with unless you become a pathologist. So think about it. You know, if you decide you want to go into the healing profession, drop me a line. I'll find out, you know, if it's really what you want to do. If you just want to try it out, fine, you know, but understand that you always have a choice in everything that you do in life. For me, it was the right path. I was at a point when I was in my 20s where I was just about to become a famous psychic reader. And I stopped because I knew it wasn't right. It was not the correct thing for me to do. Not the correct thing on my path, despite having those abilities. And I had another section, as I got older, where I was doing a lot of hands-on healing. And I stopped doing that because that was not the path either. The path for me was to go through the regular medical community, allopathic medicine, and really learn some things. And I saw a lot of things. I saw people who were so religious that they died in terror. I saw people hang on despite overwhelming odds, because they knew they had been really bad in life and they were so terrified that they were going to hell. I saw other people who wanted to leave too soon. And I'm pretty sure that most nurses could tell you that there are many people who have every reason to live and yet die. And many people who should have been dead that lived. And we can't explain that. The only way I can explain it is to say it's your will to live, and it's also what you believe in. I've seen people doing things that were seemingly impossible. People that had half a brain, literally, you know, half the brain was blown off. Things like that. People that have been electrocuted to where they were real crispy critters, and yet they're standing up, walking, and talking. People who have had strokes and yet recover. People who have had minor strokes who died. Crazy things. I even saw one guy that died from fright. And this was actually a pretty funny thing. He was in a bar in San Jose, California. And somebody had attacked him. And, you know, it was the regular meeting of the Saturday night knife and gun club, as we used to call it. And this fellow was having an argument with another drunken fellow, and the other guy pulled out a pocket knife and stabbed him right in the chest. Well, it was just a little short pocket knife, so it glanced off of the ribs. He had a very minor superficial wound, and yet he died. And nobody could figure it out. Well, the paramedics brought him back. They had to give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And, you know, had to do the cardiac compressions, the whole nine yards, brought him into the ER, and he was fine. But he had actually died from fright. And there are many people that have done that. Usually their hair turns white when they do that. This guy, his hair didn't turn white, but he actually had crossed over for a few minutes. So there are a lot of mysteries with these bodies. And if you've listened to my series on instructions for the suit, then maybe you're getting an understanding for that. And for those of you that are waiting for the next installment, I'm working on it. It takes a little while. I'm trying to figure out how to present to you how the brain and the nervous system works in an easy-to-understand way without sounding like a total doofus. And it's very difficult with that particular subject. So I'll get that out one of these days. But back to the spirituality issue. I've seen a lot of things in the hospital. They were just amazing. I have seen so many people hold on until their loved ones got there. Now, what enables them to hold on? Some people will say it's will. Some people have told me it's because of their belief in God and their belief in what they came to do. Some people have really surprised their relatives. The standard thing that happens if someone's in ICU and they're near death is that person will hold on until the person they were waiting for comes. And that person will come in and the staff will say, why don't you go get a cup of coffee? And, you know, we'll just take over. Just go down there, have a cup of coffee, and we'll let you know if anything happens. And during that time, once that person knows, even if they're unconscious, they know that that person has come to the bedside, they leave. Poof, gone. I've seen it happen again and again and again. Now, why is that? If you've seen that, you know what I'm talking about. Or I've seen them hang on until the priest gets there, or the rabbi. They'll hold on till the last minute, and as soon as the prayer is said, they're gone. How can that happen? There's got to be something to this spirituality stuff, you know? Larry Dossey did a book and several studies on the healing power of prayer. And I'm sure many of you know that if one of your relatives or yourself have been in the hospital and you've had a prayer circle praying for you, you felt the difference. And at the very least, there's a comfort that comes over people when they have that happening. So we always encouraged that. Yes, pray. We got down on our knees and prayed with people. It didn't matter if we were of the same faith. What mattered was that spiritual connection. What mattered was the sharing of that connection. And you know, they say that there are no atheists in foxholes. I believe that. I've seen so many people that converted at the last instant because they realized that there was more to it than they believed. I've seen so many people come out of the body at that last instant with a look of incredible surprise and joy on their faces. And in fact, when I was nursing years ago, I worked on a respiratory ward, and there were a lot of people there dying of terminal lung cancer and things. And I could tell, because of my psychic abilities, I could tell when someone was just about to go, and I'd go to the charge nurse and I'd say, you know, so-and-so down in 3B is going to go within the next hour, and I'm going to go sit there and hold their hand. They have nobody. Or if they had family, I'd go call them. And I was right every time. And they said, how can you do that? I said, I see them starting to lift out of their body. And I see the detachment that happens. You know, they'll still answer you, and the eyes are still looking around, but they're really not there. And sometimes you can even see other beings that come to take them, like the angels. It's really quite miraculous. So I was privileged to watch that many times, and although I didn't see beyond just a lightness coming down onto that person's face, I could see the look of wonder that was in their eyes. I could see that they were so happy, whether they believed in God or not. I still saw that. That was very, very special. I never saw any of the dark stuff. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. If you've seen the movie Ghost, you know what I'm talking about, where the dark beings come out from the pavement and take the sinners away. I've never seen anything like that. What I've seen, rather, is that when people come out of their bodies at death and they go on to the other side, there's none of this heaven or hell stuff. It's rather that you go before your board of helpers and they ask you, are you done? Did you do what you came to do? And you see your entire life and it flashes by very quickly. You see the highlights. You see what you did wrong. You see what you did right. And there's a balance there that happens. So I kind of doubt that there's all the darkness stuff going on, you know, unless maybe you believe in that. And I think that would be kind of a bad thing to be believing in, you know, if you're going to get what you believe in. And, you know, with quantum physics and everything, that's kind of shown us that, yeah, you are creating your world. So whatever you believe in is important. So I have seen so many things happen in the hospital. I have seen people that had no business being alive sitting up talking to me. Just as amazing. I've seen other people that have come back and they've said, wow, you know, I was with the angels, I was with Jesus. I was, you know, here or there. And I had to come back. And you've seen plenty of stories about that. And read plenty of books, I'm sure, or seen things on television about people that did just that. And you think, wow, is that the way it really is? And remember, I told you at the beginning of this, what you believe is what you're going to see. And if you're open, you'll see more So whatever it is that you're open to, you know, you might just see something really wondrous. You know, why limit yourself? Why not see what's really there? So the other part of this, too, is how do you apply that? You know, okay, now that I've told you that, how are you going to apply this in your lives? What use is this to those who are ill or dying or someone who's gone through a terrible accident? Well, I'm going to tell you, at least from my perspective, I'll tell you. But first, let me go into some of the people I observed. There was one man, I can't remember if I've talked about him on the show before. There was a man who I had to take care of when I was doing home health nursing. And he was completely paralyzed all the way up to his neck and blind. He had multiple sclerosis, and he had it really bad. This poor man, all he could do was lay there in bed all day. Couldn't even watch TV because he couldn't see. He could hear. But he said that, you know, he said, I lay here and I pray all day. I pray for the children of the world. He said, there's nothing else I can do. And I came in one day and I was depressed. And I said, oh my gosh, Clarence, what's wrong? And he said, I'm so useless. I'm such a burden on my family. And his family members were saying, oh, don't say that. We love you. We're glad that you're still here. And no one could console him. And I said, Clarence, you're worth more than so many people out there that are running through their lives, because you're spending your time with good intent, actively sending out love to all of the children of the world, to those that are homeless, those that are being abused, those that are scared. This man was sending his spirit out to help all of the children of the world. That just amazed me. I mean, I was in tears the first time he told me what he was doing. And that's what sustained him. Now, you might think, oh my God, that's a horrible fate. I would never want to be in that situation. Most of us wouldn't want to be in that situation. But what are you going to do if you are? Are you going to hate the world? If you do, you just make your own situation worse. And, you know, then when you get on the other side, you have to deal with the hate that you put into the world. Because we're all playing this game together. Or as they say, we're all in the soup together. So think about any of those types of things when you're going through illness or injury. Think about the state of mind that you're in and what kind of vibes you're sending out into the universe. Are you sending out the kind of vibes where people will be happy? Where people will be comforted somehow? What are you doing to make a change in the world? What are you doing to help yourself? For those who are suffering now, you have my utmost sympathies. I've been there, done that, too many times. You know, between accidents and injuries and weird illnesses and things, I've spent a fair amount of time flat on my back, looking at the ceiling, wondering what the heck I was going to do. You know, wondering how to survive, wondering why I had gone through all the pain and all the suffering, all the experience, all the hard work, trials and tribulations, just to lay on my back and not be able to do anything. You know, you get into soul searching when these things happen. And, you know, there's all those people out there that'll tell you, well, you know, you planned it. And you're thinking, oh, hell, I didn't plan this. I would never have planned this. All I can say is, maybe you did, maybe you didn't. And I can tell you from my own journey with the carbon monoxide poisoning, I was beside myself thinking, you know, this is really bad karma or something. I went to talk to my teacher and he said, no. He said, this was an accident. But if you had been paying attention, you would not have gotten this far down. But because you weren't paying attention, you got hurt. He said, you were not meant to go through this like this. And I thought about it, and I said, had a lot of little warning signs. And I decided not to pay attention because I was too busy. So for those of you who have been through something like that, all I can say is just realize that. And next time, be more careful. In the meantime, make up your mind with what you want to do. for those of you who wonder if there are miracles out there, yes, there are. I've seen plenty of them. I have plenty of them happen in my practice. I can't tell you how many times a patient has said to me, "Did you know this was going to happen?" And I have to shrug my shoulders and say, "Nope, I had no idea. All I know is I did what I was prompted to do, along with what I know to do, based upon good scientific reasoning, and things happened for the best." So my best advice to you, if you are suffering, is to do what you can now and to address that which you believe in. There are some people that believe that all suffering is of the devil. There are other people that believe that we have met the enemy and he is us, which I kind of ascribe to. So sometimes you only have to look in the mirror to find out what happened to you. And what have you learned from whatever illness or injury that you have or that is in your family? What kinds of things are you discovering that you would never have discovered otherwise? And yeah, these are hard lessons. You know, when you go to the school of hard knocks, it's called that for a reason. Some people don't recover from that. But you can change things. Look at all the studies that were done on the effect of laughter and how people cured themselves of cancer with laughter. Which makes sense if you think back on Louise Hay's work, that cancer is a disease of resentment and guilt. And I can tell you honestly that every single person that I've ever seen that has cancer, other than little kids, but adults that have cancer, in every single case, you can get to an issue of deep resentment or deep guilt, usually both at the same time. And that's why they can't pull out of it, because they're literally killing themselves. And sometimes it's what they call your stinking thinking, you know. You keep thinking, oh no, cancer, oh no, cancer, oh no, cancer, and then poof, you get what you wished for. So maybe it would help to say this one thing that one of my teachers said to me years ago. He said, worrying about something is like praying to the devil. Instead of praying to God for what you do want to happen, you're praying to the devil for what you don't want to happen. Just think about that one for a minute. How much time in the day do you spend thinking about how ill you are, or how injured you are, or how much your body hurts, or how disgusted you are that you can't do whatever it is that you wanted to do? And then think about how many hours in the day you have spent seeing yourself being whole and healthy and happy, seeing yourself doing those things that you want to do. I'm willing to bet that in most cases, you spend a heck of a lot more time thinking about the bad things. And the only person that can change that is you. No one else can change it. You know, usually the fairy godmother does not come down and boink you on the head with the magic wand and say, "You are healed." Nor does Benny Hinn come running around and slap you on the forehead. Now, there are some people that will go and do that, and I used to do a little of that myself a long time ago. But the fact of the matter is, it's your life, it's your responsibility. So what is it that you choose, and how do you choose to do it? I've had a lot of people say to me, "I don't know how to pray." So if that's your question, let's get to that right now. It's very easy. Prayer is when you're talking to God. Meditation is when you're listening. So when you pray, it's like writing a letter, except you're speaking. So you say, "Hey, God, great to see you." Or, "Hey, Dad, nice to see you. I love you." And then you say, "Thanks. Thanks for all this stuff that I have and all these great things I got to do. And for all the lessons that I've had and the growth that I've had." And then the next part is, "I really could use some help here. Would you please send me healing? Would you please help me to get through this? Would you please give me the strength or the courage?" And then the next part is, thanks a lot for listening. I'm so happy that I could talk to you about this. I love you. Bye. Talk to you later. It's that simple, people. You don't have to know any mantras, although mantras are certainly powerful. You don't have to know how to recite any prayers. All you have to do is talk to God, or the Source, from your heart. And when you do that, miracles happen. Because the Creator knows your heart. The Creator also knows lip service. So if you're flapping your gums in a repetitive manner, and you're not concentrating on what you're saying and feeling it with your heart, then you're just doing a useless gum flapping exercise. The Creator knows you, knows your heart, knows your desires, knows your fears, knows everything about you. And when you get to a certain point in your evolution, you will understand how that can be. But you have to get to know yourself first. And the best way to do that is to look deep within, honestly. And the easiest way to do that is through your connection with Spirit. So if you believe in something other than yourself, greater than yourself, something that truly runs the universe, you're a few steps ahead of the game. It makes it a heck of a lot easier. If you don't believe in anything, there will come a point when you will believe. Like my atheist friends used to say, well, I don't believe in God. I said, that's okay. God believes in you. So you can choose how you're going to do things in life. I can tell you that getting through an illness with spirituality is much easier and a heck of a lot more fun, because then you get to witness miracles. If you're open to it, that is. I have one dear friend who says, I wish I could have miracles in my life like you do. And I just look at her and I say, well, you'll see it when you believe it. So I'm borrowing that line from Dr. Wayne Dyer. I thought that was a great line. And it's true. If you don't believe something can happen, then you probably won't see it. It's not that it won't happen. It'll happen. You just won't notice it. And if you think I'm kidding about that, check out learningstrategies.com. And if you ever get to listen to Paul Sheely speak, go listen to him. It's really amazing. He brought this movie to one seminar that I was at, a little video clip, and it showed people playing basketball. And then he showed it again, and he asked everybody, did you notice anything different? And there were only about 7 people out of 1,100 people that raised their hands and were laughing. And everybody else just kind of sat there. And so then he ran the clip really slow. The difference was there was somebody in a gorilla suit that also had on one of the jerseys of the basketball team and waltzed right through the middle. And pretty much 1,100 people didn't notice that. Now, why was that? It was because they didn't believe there would be a gorilla in a basketball suit going through the middle of the game. And if you've seen What the Bleep, the movie, there's an explanation in there about why the Native Americans did not react when all the Europeans came over. And they talked about how the shaman looked and looked and knew something was on the water because he saw the difference in the wave patterns, but he didn't know what it was. And it took a long time before he actually saw the boat. And it took a long time for the people to see that these were men that came off of these boats, because they didn't have that in their sphere of existence. And that brings us to the UFO question. How many people know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that there are ETs and UFOs around us right now? How many people know that there are ghosts, that there are beings from other dimensions? And how many people think that's a bunch of hogwash? Well, guess what? The people that know about the UFOs see them all the time. Just come up to Sedona sometime and check it out. We all know where they are. You know, we see them all the time. We go out UFO watching. It's a lot of fun. And we get to see really interesting people. Now, there's a lot of people that run around Sedona and claim to be extraterrestrials. Are they? I don't know. And when they start acting crazy, we kind of go, yeah, right. You know, for all I know, maybe they are. So now, how does that apply to spirituality and medicine? Let me give you an example. When I was doing home health nursing, we had this one little old lady who could not heal. I mean, this woman had the worst looking ulcer on her leg, and we were giving her IV antibiotics, really heavy duty ones, going out there every day and changing her wound dressing on her leg. And it had been months, and we were still out there with no progress. They were stumped. Nobody could figure out what's going on. Finally, I sat and talked with her. And I said, what do you believe in spiritually? She said, oh, I believe in Jesus. I said, okay, great. And I said, what do you think is going on with this thing with your leg? She said, oh, I know exactly what it is. I said, great, what is it? She said, well, she said, my son hates me. And my son has put a curse on me. And this is going to kill me. And I felt such sorrow when this woman said this. And I said, dear, don't you understand that love is the greatest force in existence? And that nothing can get past love? Nothing can defeat it? And there is nothing that it can't defeat? And she just looked at me and she said, how do I know that? I said, I'm telling you that. I said, how could you have forgotten that? So we talked about it for a while, and I got down on my knees and I prayed with her. And we prayed to Jesus. And you know, that woman healed up so fast, but it was so funny. When I went back to the office, they asked me what I did. And the wound care nurse was furious with me. She said, you played into her delusion. And I just laughed. I said, who cares? This is what this woman believes. Do you want her to get well or not? Would you rather see her die? You know, that kind of stuff doesn't make any sense to me. What makes sense to me is you operate from the belief system that you live in. And it's pretty impossible for most people to do anything but that. So if your belief system is such that you are strong in your religious faith, use it. It will make a huge difference. If your belief is that of a belief in miracles, then you seek that out and be open to it and be prepared for it. If you have no belief, maybe you ought to get one or do something. It's your choice. Whatever that you want can happen. I can tell you from seeing the different things that have happened in the hospital and in my own practice that people that believe are the ones that get well. People that don't believe have ongoing problems because they have nothing that has their back. Nothing to be supported by. And that's pretty sad. They think they can do it themselves. But, you know, in these bodies, we're these little weak creatures. We have to bring the spirit in. When you bring the spirit in, life becomes magical. No matter what you're doing. And in my practice, I bring the spirit in continuously. And if you've heard me talk about the holographic projector room, that's what it's all about. It's about bringing in your higher guidance, your healing team, from whatever system you believe in. I don't particularly care. All I care about is doing my part. And my part is to help my patients to be well. So, you know, once in a while I do some pretty wacky little things like, you know, create this holographic projector room and let people come in and see. And I get to watch all the miracles that happen. You know, and I use my intuition. Your intuition is where God's really talking to you and saying, hey, go and do this. Go and do that. This is the answer. So when you start using that, really using your intuition, that's your answer. You know, if your intuition says, you know what, you really need to take, you know, a potassium pill and you need to start adding that to your regimen every day, or your intuition says, you know, you need to drink at least 3 more quarts of water a day and put some lemon juice in it. Or your intuition says, don't eat that piece of cake every day. Or it says, don't eat all that fry food. You know, get yourself some more vegetables. And you say to your intuition, nah, I don't want to do that. Pretty soon the intuition says, okay, I'm not going to say anything to you anymore. Your higher self kind of gives up and says, well, you know, they'll learn. One way or the other, they're going to learn. So at that point, you're kind of hopeless. You really need your intuition. But when you can use your intuition, it's an amazing thing. And I'm here to tell you it works. I've used it in every aspect of my life for so long now. It's saved my life many, many times. And I use it with my patients. Sometimes I just get this intuition that, you know, this is going on or that's going on or they need this little thing or that. And then they look at me with wonder and they say, how did you know? And they say, oh, well, you're psychic. And I have to tell them, you know, you have this too. Everyone has this intuition. I call it God talking to you. That's your channel to the source, you know, your direct phone line. It's kind of like your red phone, you know. It's your emergency line to the Creator. And why would you not use that? If your intuition tells you, as you're about to go into surgery, that you should not do that, then maybe you should listen to that. And I say this because I have had several friends who knew, who felt deep in their bones, they should not go in and have a certain surgery done. And they went and had it done and have had intractable suffering since. The surgery was botched. Things happened, you know, just horrible stuff. And so now they suffer for the rest of their lives because they were stubborn. And they thought that the intellect had more to do than the intuition. And I'm here to tell you it's exactly the reverse. Your intuition is the most important thing. Your intuition will save your life, will save your happiness, will save you from a whole lot of suffering. Your intellect will get you in trouble. And, you know, I've hung out with a lot of geniuses for a long time. I've watched their intellect get them into some really stupid things, harmful things, not only for themselves, but for other people. I've watched them rationalize their way into some of the most horrible behaviors and truly insane things. Whereas your intuition would never allow you to do these things. Your intuition is heart-centered. Your intuition is your connection to the source. Your intuition is there for a reason. So you see, spirituality is really an elevated intuition. It's really a connection of all of the parts of you with all of the parts of creation and with the Creator itself. So when I'm talking about bringing spirituality into medicine, I'm talking about that connection. Let me offer you a few other little things. When we started getting new classes of pharmaceutical drugs in, and by the way, there are so many new classes now, you just can't even keep up. The PDR has become huge. But when these new classes of antipsychotics and tranquilizers and sleep aids and things started coming out, we started giving them to people. I can't remember how many times that I would go into someone's room and they'd be sitting there just shaking in fear and wild-eyed. And I'd say, what's wrong? And so many times I would have these people tell me, I'm surrounded by demons. And, you know, having the vision myself, I'd look around, I'd go, well, who are you talking about? And they'd point at some nurse or doctor, and I'd look at him and I'd go, yep, well, demon, mm-hmm, demon, yep, yep, reptilian, yep, mm-hmm. Oh, yep, I agree, that one's an angel. Mm-hmm. And these people would look at me and say, wow, you see that? I was like, yeah, you're seeing the truth. Some of those drugs will kind of take away the veils, you know, and you will be able to see, kind of like when you do any of the psychotropic stuff, you know, if you're doing mushrooms or, you know, people that get stoned all the time on marijuana, things like that, you see things because it's taking away some of that rigid belief system that you might have had. It's taking the blinders off of your eyes and allowing you to see what's really there. And another point is about schizophrenics, and you may have heard me talk about it before, that schizophrenics and psychics are very close. The only difference is that psychics can tune the radio up and down the bands, AM, FM, wherever they want to go, whatever type of thing they want to listen to, and they can turn the volume up or down and off. Schizophrenics are unable to control any of that, and they're stuck in the worst AM station you could imagine. They're stuck down with the dregs of hell, basically. They're hearing noise that never stops. They're seeing horrendous, horrific beings. And you know, we all have that capability. It's a matter of vibration. It's a matter of frequency. So if your frequency is high enough, you see the angels. If your frequency is too low, you see nothing but demons. So it goes, you know, spirituality goes way beyond what most people would think. It's not prayers. It's about connection, and it's about your frequency. So now the secret to being well, then, is to increase your frequency. So now how are you going to do that? And we've only got 10 minutes left. But let's get down and dirty here and start talking about the very, very basics of how to increase frequency. The most basic thing is to create more light, because in order to dispel darkness, all one needs to do is to increase the light. Sounds simple, huh? Let's think about it for a minute. How are you going to increase your light? First of all, if you're ill and you're contemplating it and you're talking to your friends about it every day, you're reinforcing the darkness. You're reinforcing pain and suffering. You are reinforcing your reality in that pain and suffering. Then you sit down and you watch television. And what do you watch? You watch divorce court, court TV. You watch, you know, shoot 'em up type stuff, horror movies. You listen to the news and it's all bad. What are you putting into your body? You read the newspapers, it's all bad too. Or you watch the soap operas and you see these women that are fully made up with expensive designer clothes and they're all wearing large bling, you know, lots of jewelry. People don't walk around like that. Well, maybe in Palm Beach they do, but, you know, in most of the rest of the world, they don't. That's not real. So the question is, what are you feeding yourself? And I'm not talking about food for your body. I'm talking about food for your soul. What are you feeding yourself? How are you going to raise your vibration when all you're putting into yourself is low vibration? How are you going to become well when all you can see is illness? How are you going to deal with today when all you believe in is tomorrow? Let me pose to you an important thing, and that is that we are to be here now, and that all we have is now. In this very moment, where are you? In this very moment, who are you? In this very moment, what are you experiencing? And if you can bring yourself into the now, even for a short moment at a time, and consistently do it, you will become well. You will have no choice but to become well when you consciously go after it, when you consciously refuse to be ill. Now, I know there's probably some of you out there going, oh, no way, I've had this for a long time. Okay, I guess you're going to continue to have it for a long time then. This is your choice do the best that you can. If you don't try, no one else will. Or rather, there is no try, there's only do. You remember that in Star Wars where the little creature Yoda says, there is no try, there is only do, do or do not. So I say to you, do or do not. It's your choice. And I know you've heard me say before when I have people that come into the office and they say, well, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. I say, okay, fine, be sick. And they look shocked. And they say, that's not a nice thing to say. I tell them, well, it's your life. Do whatever the heck you want to do. It's not up to me. I'm here as your consultant. You know, you came to seek me out. And if you're not going to listen to what I can help you with, then why are you here? And, you know, I've had the misfortune of trying to treat a couple of people who didn't want to be well. And it becomes glaringly obvious that they have no desire to be well. And you might think, oh, that's terrible, that can't be true, but it is. And it's because they want out, they want off the planet. But they don't want to be having their family and friends thinking of them as cowards. They don't want to have those bad thoughts. They would rather have people feel sorry for them. And again, that's a choice. So now you've got the secret. We've talked a little bit about spirituality and medicine, maybe from a different angle than you've heard before. Hopefully this has been helpful. The main thing to remember is you're in charge. It's your body. It's your life. So what are you going to do about it? And I'm one of those people that won't sit here and listen to people moan and cry about their state. What I always say is, okay, great, what are you going to do about it? So, you know, my friends that are that way don't get much sympathy from me. I'm really terrible that way. And it's not that I'm in perfect health. I'm not. I'm working at it like so many other people. But the difference between those of us who work at it and those who don't is that we don't sit around and cry about it. We just get on with life. You know, we find ways around it. We find ways to get better and better in every moment because we realize this moment right now is all that we have. Everything else is an illusion. The past no longer exists, and the future does not yet exist. We just have now. Or as a friend of mine used to say, time is what we got lots of. We have nothing but eternity, the eternal now, this eternal moment. So I hope I've given you some things to think about in your journey towards health. And hopefully next week I'll be able to have my guest that I was going to have on today talking about water for Africa and some miraculous water that we've discovered that's pretty interesting. But I'm not going to promise anything. We'll see what happens next week. But I have some interesting people lined up that are very spiritual people, and I think you all are going to enjoy hearing from them and hearing their views on spirituality and health and how to attain these states. And remember, this is all our natural birthright, too. We are spiritual beings having a human existence. So until next time, be happy, be healthy, and thank you for tuning in. I hope that you've enjoyed this show. This has been Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And please tune in next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.